Napa know-how.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Pacers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can always get a daily dose of great information about your favorite NBA and NFL team, including the Pacers, right here. My name is Tom Lewis of IndyCornrows.com, and I'm always trying to bring you the latest information on the Pacers, try and share what I see, hear, or ponder about the Pacers, just like you do, and get ready for the upcoming game, which for the Pacers will be the Portland Trail Blazers on Wednesday evening in Portland as they begin a big five-game road trip that will last about a week and a half while the circus is in Indy. And also on the show today, we will ponder the question of what to do with Monte Ellis. He always seems to be the odd man out when a player as Glenn Robinson III has recently rises up and seems to demand more playing time. So I always hear from fans and media and other folks speculating about maybe Monte is sliding over, but not always that easy. And then finally we'll hear from the fellas on the Dunked On podcast. They went through some of the Eastern Conference teams and shared their thoughts on the Pacers after 18 games so far. So before we get going, I want to make sure you reach out to me via email. Appreciate those that have been sending in comments. Please shoot me an email at indycornrows@gmail.com. And you can also hit me on Twitter at indycornrows. So please do. All right. Now, speaking of emails, I had a couple of emails about Monte Ellis and where he fits in the Pacers rotation or where people think he may fit. Thanks, Joe Lind and Terrell James. A couple of emails about that. Also, been hearing this a lot on, you know, various talk shows around town and social media. Also, on Indy Cornrows, there's a good fan post by Colts Fan 4187 who kind of captures the essence of everything you've been hearing, whether it be on social media or radio, TV, whatever, that once Paul George is healthy and ready to go, that Glenn Robinson III to stay in and start in that shooting guard slot, move Monte to the bench, because for one, the third has been quite a dynamic presence of late and gives the Pacers more length and athletic ability and a far better defensive presence alongside of Paul George. Of course, he's young. It'll help him develop. He's got the confidence. Let's ride it. Boom, boom, boom. On to great, bigger, and better things. So that's generally the idea, and it's kind of hard to argue with that position because it does make great sense. And the way Robinson's been playing of late, you think maybe his game definitely has more room to evolve, but continuing to jumpstart it now that he's been forced into the lineup and settled in and taking his game to a little bit different level, now would be the time to tap into that, similar to how Paul George got his opportunity and ran with it. So moving Monte to the bench for that does make sense, but it seems to be a constant theme with Monte, even at the beginning of the year. And I felt throughout the summer that the Pacers probably were trying to move Monte because the fit hasn't seemed right on the roster. When you had Jeff Teague and he both being guards who like to drive the lane and aren't really spot-up three-point shooters, And then when he's on the bench, Rodney Stuckey, kind of the same type of player who can come in and heat up. Stuckey's been playing great now that he's back healthy off the bench. But those two as a bench combo might not work as well. I think Brooks and Stuckey and or Ellis is a better backcourt reserve combo. So there's always a little odd fit here. And the idea of trying to trade him isn't that easy because, again, I feel like the Pacers probably were making a few calls, to say the least, over the summer and maybe continuing to do that. I know looking ahead at some of the teams that are kind of struggling and may want to be willing to take Ellis on, even though his salary right now around over $11 million seems high, but he just has 2 years left after this year. He has a player option, but I would imagine he would be picking up that option since it seems like only the young guys are the ones really cashing in this new NBA market. So it seems like he'd probably be picking up that player option. So a team like right now, you're looking at Portland who's struggling, and they were kind of put in a spot where they had to pay Allen Crabbe quite a bit of money, and they have him now on the books over 18 to 19 million for 5 years per year. Yeah, per year. He's struggling right now. I'm sure they're not going to unload him, but that team as a whole, as we'll get to in a little bit, is struggling a little bit. This is the type of situation that could brew up where they might want to revamp their salary structure because it's very backcourt heavy in Portland. And if Monte can help them lower it in the near term and then for the long term free up even more, they may be willing to do that if the year continues to slide. So that would create an opportunity. I think of a team like Orlando who's really struggling, and some of the guys that they have on their roster don't seem to be fitting in with what Frank Vogel's doing there. Maybe they might want to make a move. Obviously, Vogel knows Monte, and depending upon how the salaries would match up, maybe that's an opportunity. So there probably will be different opportunities in the future for it to move if, again, Glenn Robinson III just continues to develop and make a case that he's got to be in that roster, then it'd be safe to move Monte. But there's one thing that all these arguments miss, and that is that Monte is a veteran guy in that locker room. And really, when you're looking at it from the viewpoint kind of a fan post, you're looking at it strictly on the surface. And right now, I mean, we're talking about a very small sample size with Glenn Robinson. But let me point you to a piece by Nate Taylor, who has a good article about Monte reinventing himself this year and trying to evolve into a different player and impact the team differently. It hasn't always been perfect, but, you know, there's been a lot of games where he's hardly shot the ball and had a lot of assists. He's going about his game in a different way. And in fact, he's has, so far per game, his shot attempts are a career low by quite a bit, other than his rookie season when he, played less than 20 minutes a game. But from the time from his second year on, when he's played over 30 minutes a game, his shot attempts per game have always been, 13, 14, 15 and up. And right now he's below 10 per game. And that shows he's trying to do a little something different, along with what Nate McMillan's been asking him to do, trying to be more impactful without the ball, not just making plays, driving, and drawing the defense, but trying to move. And this is something that he has to develop also, but learning and working more efficiently to move without the ball and create more opportunities. And that's been a struggle for the team as a whole as they've adjusted in this early season with all the new faces. So that, again, is something that Monte's developing, and that could very well be a role off the bench or on the starting unit, whatever it may be. I will say, as far as the starting or reserve, I don't know that matters that much, and I honestly am a proponent of Glenn Robinson staying in that starting lineup. I'd like to develop that youth and depth with the younger players and let the veterans fill in the gaps as opposed to the young guy filling in the gaps the way at least the season's going right now. So regardless, there is that veteran voice, which Nate Taylor gets into pretty well. You know, at the beginning of camp this year, media day, Monte talked about how he, you know, was a pretty big vocal leader last year, but he was going to be deferring a bit more to Paul George in that role this year. But as PPE is still developing that voice, we know he recently had a players-only meeting that he got on the players after that Atlanta game and seemed to get everybody's attention, which is good to hear. And then hopefully he can do that and get on the court and be that same type of guy that's imposing his will with his play and getting his teammates to play at a higher level, lifting him up. But Monte has still been a voice in the locker room. And as mentioned in the article, Miles Turner has some quotes about how Monte has been pretty tough on him at times this year. And he understands the toughness, appreciates it, but yeah, he's been tough on him. And, you know, Turner's not the only one. He's got a demanding voice. And so, you know, while moving Monte, especially in the near term, might fix a physical issue on the roster, it could create a bit of an emotional one that wouldn't be filled and would take some time to figure out. And it would take some time to figure out, especially when you're wanting to bring along young guys and have them continue to grow. You know, you do need those voices to lean on. So Monte remains as he has been his whole career, he's kind of a unique player in a lot of ways, and a thrilling player and maybe at times frustrating player. But right now for the Pacers, he creates a dilemma because of all those characteristics in his game and personality, and it will be interesting to see how it plays out here. So this is a topic that we were by no means close to finish debating, and I would really love to hear some feedback on Monte, what to do with Monte. So please hit me up, indycornrows@gmail.com. Let me know what you think. I'd love to share your thoughts and potential solutions with other fans. That'd be great. So let's move on now, as the Pacers have, to Portland, Oregon, where the Blazers and Pacers will tip off on Wednesday evening. The Blazers, kind of like the Pacers, having a disappointing start to the season. The season's not all lost. They're 9-10 compared to how the Pacers are 9-9. And they've shown signs of being you know, the team most thought they could be. I think the beginning of the year, Vegas had them at around 46 wins over-under, where the Pacers were about 44 or 45 wins, so comparable in that area. But with, you know, Damian Lillard signed for the long term and CJ McCollum, this team seemed to be building around those guys, adding some front court players that were more role players, and the future really looking bright. And it still is, obviously, they're young players, but they are having problems stopping teams from scoring. In their last eight games, they are 2-6 and giving up a ton of points. Right now, they're last in the league in defensive efficiency. And the Pacers have jumped up thanks to their recent solid play and, of course, 70 points by the Clippers. The Pacers are up to around 11th in defensive efficiency. Now, their offense has dropped down. And so Portland's offense is up around, you know, 8, 9, 10 area. So they're kind of a yin and yang team going at it right now with the way they're playing. Give it 3 weeks, all that may switch. But regardless, this is a game the Pacers could win. I know the Blazers are obviously frustrated at this point. Damian Lillard has been the highlight player. He's averaging over 28 points a game. And McCollum's actually averaging over 22 points a game. So that's a dynamic duo. You know, when you're getting 50 points out of your backcourt, you're always a lethal offense to deal with. But again, struggling to stop teams around the rim. I think, you know, Mason Plumlee's playing at center recently have moved Ed Davis into the starting lineup, and Mo Harkless is the other starter. So they are trying to find a match that gives them a little more defensive presence in that front court. Now, their other big offseason signings, Evan Turner, who we all know, signed big money deal for with Portland at about $17 million a year. Oh, yeah. Someone gave Evan Turner all that money. Only problem was the patience and game planning of Brad Stevens didn't come along with it. So Turner cashed in, but it struggled out of the gate in Portland. Obviously, he is a versatile player, but one that can frustrate as well, as we know here in Indiana, for sure. The other guy, Alan Crabb, was going to sign with the Nets for some big money, and he's making over $18 million this year now. The Blazers matched that offer sheet, so they are feeling a little Hibbert-esque remorse here, maybe, possibly. But again, early in that contract, Crabb has just not been shooting as well as he'd like. But again, that's something that could improve and give them a boost. So the Blazers are kind of figuring things out with new guys in the lineup and different guys playing in new roles with more expected of them. And it seems like we've heard that story before. Yeah. They may be looking in the mirror of their Eastern Conference doppelganger with the Pacers in town on Wednesday night. So finally, I want to share a clip from the Dunked On podcast with Nate Duncan and Danny LaRoe. They talk about the Pacers. This was recorded on Monday following the win of the Clippers. They were going through the Eastern Conference teams. So you get to hear what they think about the Pacers after 18 games. A couple highlights about Paul George's injury and kind of the odd nature of the injury, which I kind of agree with the way it's been handled. You know, it was an ankle injury, then we had the sore lower back, took a game off after playing on the ankle, and then now it's back to the ankle soreness. Seems to be pretty long for a sore ankle. So until there's anything else, though, it creates all this little bit of intrigue around the injury. So it is an odd one. It'll be nice to breathe a sigh of relief when he's back on the court, which I believe he and the team are hoping will be against the Clippers next Sunday. So also they mentioned being impressed with Thad Young's three-point shooting, who's he's off to a real good start shooting the three, especially considering he only shot a handful last season. And this year, he's been shooting that in games once in a while. You know, so far, his three-point shooting percentage for the season is 40%. So that is great. And the good point that's made here by Nate is that he's shooting him in rhythm, within the flow, and it looks easy and natural, and something that he can, looks like he'll be able to continue to rely on here as his career goes on. And also, a good point made that with that perimeter shooting from Thad and the ability of Miles Turner to step out and hit perimeter shots along with Paul George, kind of opens up things for Monte and Jeff Teague, who are comfortable driving in the lane and creating offense that way as opposed to spotting up and shooting threes themselves. So it doesn't mean as a whole the team is doing great shooting three-pointers, but having those perimeter threats opens up offense and allows the team to move the ball and create scoring opportunities. So anyway, check out the whole clip from the Dunked On podcast right here.
Let's get to Indiana. Somehow 9-9, two dominating victories out of nowhere, one against a Brooklyn team that really is falling down the stairs at this point, but then destroyed the Clippers, held them to only 70 points. This defense now up to 17th. They had really through their first 10 games, they're in the bottom three or four in the league, as I recall. Still only 22nd in offense. I don't know how much that's going to improve, but I mean, to have had these wins without Paul George is fantastic. And yeah, they have not been that good overall in terms of their point differential, but they're 500 and they've played now a bunch of games without Paul George.
It's weird to feel the same way as I did at the beginning of the season, but be more optimistic just because they banked a few wins. Like that really is what has happened.
Well, didn't we have them as like slightly over 500 at the start of the year?
I think so. Something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of today's game you watched, but I was one of the ones that I was flipping between. And it was just amazing throughout the game that the Clippers are generally one of the most judicious teams with the ball. That was a huge disparity in this game, was a 7 turnover advantage for the Pacers. And then offensive rebounding, the Clippers actually have engaged less in to focus on stopping teams in transition. The Pacers had a +7 there. And those two things combined with just fouling the Clippers more often led to a 22 field goal attempt advantage in this game, which was a large part of the margin, because when you just put up that many more shots, you're going to do it. And the Clippers missed more than they usually do.
The Paul George injury raised some eyebrows to you at all, the way it's been handled? It does for me, because he missed, I think, 2 or 3 games with this sprained ankle. Then he plays 38 minutes, and then he has recurring soreness, and he sits again now for, I think, 3 or 4 games. This is the first time that he's missed it any time, essentially, since he had that horrific broken leg. Not the best. Anytime someone comes back, tries to play, and then has to sit out again with the same injury, and there weren't any reports that he, like, retweaked it or anything, it's been soreness, you wonder a little bit.
You do. And they have a big trip coming up, a series of important opponents. They face the Blazers, the Clippers, and the Warriors, and then less critical against the Suns and the Mavericks. But if they're going to be competitive in fighting for a playoff spot in the East, in some ways those road games against lesser teams could be more important, just because they have a greater chance of winning.
Suns, Mavericks, like, those are the type of games you got to win if you're going to be in the playoffs, if you're Indiana.
And then they only have 2 more home games, and then they go on the road again. So if they can get right maybe in some of those winnable ones, that's going to be what separates it. Because it's unlikely Paul George could come back, because he's already basically out until through Wednesday's game, and then he could be back December 4th against the Clippers, and they play the Warriors the next night. Those two games probably tough for them to take either one, despite beating the Clippers today. But they're going to need more really from everybody. Fortunately, Jeff Teague turned it around after he got in that time to panic episode for a good reason. He's done a lot better.
Yeah, he has, but I looked at his last 8 games. He's still only averaging 15 points, which, and not on incredible efficiency either. He's had a couple of like big, nice games, like that overtime game that they somehow won against Oklahoma City. I mean, those have been like 3 really nice wins that they've had without Paul George. He hasn't been terrible the way he was. He's still shooting poorly on 3-pointers. They're going to need more shooting from him, but at least he looks a little bit better. He tweaked his ankle against the Warriors, but he's been back since then. I think said that he could return even in that game, but it was such a blowout that he didn't, and he's been back since. Thad Young, a bright spot for the Pacers. He's shooting 43% on threes, and it looks very legitimate. We talked about how he, at the start of the year, he's only really about a 30% career 3-point shooter, not a ton of volume. And not only is he shooting a good percentage, I'm just liking the way he's shooting an easy ball. I mean, he'll be taking shots where he kind of backs up, has to get his feet straight. You know, it's not just like a dead spot up, got an hour to get it off type of shots that he's been hitting. And I really like how aggressive he's been from three. I hope that continues. I think with his shooting and Turner's shooting, and then you throw George in there, that could allow Teague and Ellis, who are not great shooters, to get to the basket. Now, of course, you still want the ball in Paul George's hands, and then that lack of shooting from Teague and Ellis becomes more of a problem. So you have that fit issue, but at least if Young is going to be shooting threes, which he hasn't throughout most of his career, and you have to guard him out there, I think that can be big for their offense. Turner, his shooting, he's at 60% on long twos, and those are 30% of his shots. So that's not going to continue. He's shooting 54%, but a lot of it is on the strength of those. He is shooting only 25% on threes. Maybe that'll go up a little bit. And then Monte Ellis, the RPM rankings came out recently, small sample, but 82nd in real plus minus among shooting guards.
Okay, thanks again to Nate and Danny from the Dunked On podcast for the comments on the Pacers there. And one quick injury note update before we close up shop here. So currently, Paul George is out. CJ Miles is out. Kevin Serafin is out for the game in Portland, as expected. As for the Blazers, they are without Al-Farouq Aminu and Festus Ezeli in the front court. So currently, the Blazers, as I mentioned, been starting Mason Plumlee, Ed Davis, Maurice Harkless, along with C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard, Pacers will certainly have their similar starting lineup with Teague, Monte, GR3, Thad Young, and Miles Turner. All right, so let me know what you think of the game Wednesday night. Love to hear from you. Also, again, love to hear about any thoughts on Pacers, Monte Ellis, Paul George injury, where you think they're headed. Hit me with any comments on email at indiecornrows@gmail.com and on Twitter at indiecornrows. Also, you can find us on audioboom.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or Google Play, where you can find all past episodes. So check them out. Well, that's all for now. You've been listening to Locked On Pacers on the Locked On Podcast Network. You got it.